about your results. Stress.
I'm a high-stress person with a high-stress job, and now that I'm pregnant, I'm stressing about stressing too much. Can too much stress be bad for a baby?
Most mommies-to-be are stressed out sometimes, or even often during their 9 months. But here's some news that should calm you down. Research shows that pregnancy isn't affected by typical stress levels. If you're able to cope well with your everyday stress, even if it's more than most people could take on, then your baby will be able to cope just fine too. In fact, a certain amount of stress, if you're good at handling it, can be a pregnancy plus. It can keep you on your toes, keeping you motivated to take the best possible care of yourself, your baby, and your pregnancy. That said, too much stress or stress that isn't well managed can take its toll, particularly if it continues into the second and third trimesters, which means that learning how to handle stress constructively or cutting back on it as needed should become a priority now. The following should help. Unload it. Allowing your anxieties to surface is the best way of ensuring they don't get you down. Make sure you have somewhere to vent and someone to vent to. Maintain open lines of communication with your spouse, spending some time at the end of each day, preferably not too close to bedtime, which should be as stress-free as possible. Sharing concerns and frustrations. Together, you may be able to find some relief, some solutions, and ideally, a good laugh or two. Is he too stressed to absorb enough of your stress? Find others who can lend an ear. A friend, another family member, coworkers, who will understand your workplace stress better? Your online buddies or your practitioner, especially if you're concerned about the physical effects of your stress. If you need more than a friendly ear, consider counseling to help you develop strategies to better deal with your stress. Do something about it. Identify sources of stress in your life and determine how they can be modified. If you're clearly trying to do too much, cut back in areas that are not high priority. This is something you're going to have to do big time anyway once you have a bigger priority, a new baby on the agenda. If you've taken on too many responsibilities at home or at work, decide which can be postponed or delegated. Learn to say no to new projects or activities before you're overloaded. Another skill you're wise to cultivate pre-baby. Sometimes making lists of the hundreds of things you need to get done at home or at work and the order in which you're planning to do them can help you feel more in control of the chaos in your life. For a satisfying sense of accomplishment, check items off your list as they're taken care of. Sleep it off. Sleep is the ticket to regeneration for mind and body. Often, feelings of tension and anxiety are prompted by not getting enough shut-eye. And of course, having too much tension and anxiety can also prevent you from getting enough shut-eye. So try to break the sleepless, stressed, sleepless cycle. Nourish it. Hectic lifestyles can lead to hectic eating styles. Inadequate nutrition during pregnancy can be a double whammy. It can hamper your ability to handle stress, and it can eventually affect your baby's well-being. So be sure to eat well and regularly. 6 mini-meals will best keep you going when the going gets stressful. Focus on complex carbs and protein and steer clear of excessive caffeine and sugar, 2 staples of the stress life that can actually leave you less able to cope. Wash it away. A warm bath is an excellent way to relieve tension. Try it after a stressful day. It will also help you sleep better. Run it off, or swim it off, or prenatal yoga it off. You might think that the last thing you need in your life is more activity, but exercise is one of the best stress relievers and mood boosters. Build some into your busy day.
Expect the best. It's long been speculated that optimistic people live longer, healthier lives. Now it's been suggested that an expectant mom's optimistic outlook can actually improve the outlook for her unborn baby, too. Researchers have found that seeing the bright side reduces the chance of a high-risk woman delivering a preterm or low birth weight baby. A lower level of stress in optimistic women definitely plays a part in the lowered risk. High levels of stress, after all, have been implicated in a variety of health problems in and out of pregnancy. But stress itself apparently doesn't tell the whole story. Women who are optimistic, not surprisingly, are more likely to take better care of themselves, eating well, exercising right, getting regular prenatal care, and making good lifestyle choices. And these positive behaviors, fueled by the power of positive thinking, can, of course, have a very positive effect on pregnancy and fetal well-being. Researchers point out that it's never too late to start seeing the bright side when you're expecting. Learning how to expect the best instead of the worst can actually help make those expectations come true. A good reason to start seeing that glass of milk as half full instead of half empty.
Kamet. Explore many of the complementary and alternative therapies that can promise inner calm. Among them, biofeedback, acupuncture, hypnotherapy, massage, or even a shoulder rub from your partner. Meditation and visualization can also melt the stress away.
Relaxation made easy. Is your growing bundle of joy making you a quivering bundle of nerves? Now's a great time to learn some soothing relaxation techniques, not just because they can help you cope with pregnancy concerns, but because they'll come in handy in your hectic life as a new mom. Yoga's a fabulous de-stressor if you have the time to take a prenatal class or practice with a DVD or online video. If you don't, you can try this simple relaxation technique, which is easy to learn and to do anywhere, anytime. If you find it helpful, you can do it when anxiety strikes and or regularly several times a day to try to ward it off. Sit with your eyes closed and imagine your ideal happy place, a sunset over your favorite beach with waves gently lapping the shore, or a serene mountain vista complete with babbling brook, or envision your baby-to-be wrapped in your arms on a sunny day in the park. Then, working your way up from your toes to your face, concentrate on relaxing every muscle. Breathe slowly, deeply, silently noting each inhale or exhale, or choosing a simple word, such as yes or one, to repeat aloud every time you exhale. 10 to 20 minutes should do the trick, though even a minute or two is better than nothing.
Get away from it. Combat stress with any activity you find relaxing. Lose it in reading, a good movie or music, knitting. You can relax while you get a head start on those booties, browsing online for baby clothes, lunching with a fun friend, keeping a journal, another good way to vent your feelings, scrapbooking, or walk away from it. Even a quick stroll can be relaxing and rejuvenating. Cut it back. Maybe what's causing the stress just isn't worth it. If it's your job that's got you too wired, consider taking early maternity leave or cutting back to part-time if either of these options is financially feasible, or delegating some of your workload to reduce stress to a level that doesn't weigh you down. A change of jobs or careers might be impractical to pull off now, but it might be something to consider once your baby arrives. If your stress is the kind that causes anxiety, sleeplessness, or depression, triggers physical symptoms such as chronic headaches or loss of appetite, or even leads to unhealthy behaviors, smoking for instance, talk to your practitioner.
For dads, anxiety over life changes. Worried about how different your life will be once you're a dad? Little babies do bring some large life changes, no doubt about it. And all expectant parents worry about them. Thinking about them, and even stressing about them a little, now is actually a really good thing, since it gives you a chance to prepare realistically for the impact parenthood will have on your life. The most common dad-to-be worries include, will our relationship change? Let's get real. Yes, your relationship will change. From the moment baby comes into your life, spontaneous intimacy and complete privacy will be precious and often unattainable commodities. Romance may have to be planned during baby's nap rather than spur of the moment, and interruptions may be the rule. But as long as you both make the effort to make time for each other, whether that means catching up over a late dinner once baby's in bed, or giving up a game with the guys so you can play games of an entirely different kind with your partner, or starting a weekly date night. Your relationship will weather the changes well. Many couples, in fact, find that becoming a threesome deepens, strengthens, and improves their twosome, bringing them closer together than they've ever been before. How will work be affected? That depends on your work schedule. If you currently work long hours with little time off, you may need and want to make some changes so that fatherhood can become the priority in your life that you'll want it to be. And don't wait until you officially graduate to dad status. Think about taking time off now for prenatal checkups, as well as to help your exhausted spouse with baby preparations. Start weaning yourself off those 12-hour days and resist the temptation to continue your day at the office at home. Avoid trips and a heavy workload during the 2 months before and after your baby's arrival, if you can. And if it's at all possible, consider taking paternity leave in the early weeks of baby's life. Will we have to give up our lifestyle? You probably won't have to say goodbye to activities as usual or your social life as you knew it, but you should expect to make some adjustments, at least up front. A new baby does and should take center stage, pushing some old lifestyle habits temporarily aside. Parties, movies, and sports may be tricky to fit in between feedings, and cozy dinners for two at your favorite bistro may become noisy meals for three at family restaurants that tolerate squirming infants. Your circle of friends may change somewhat, too. You may suddenly find yourself gravitating toward fellow baby wearers or stroller pushers for empathetic companionship. Not to say that there won't be a place in your new life with baby for old friends who aren't fathers, and pastimes from your pre-parent past. Just that your priorities will likely do some necessary shifting. Can we afford a larger family? With the cost of having and raising a baby going through the roof, many expectant parents lose sleep over this very legitimate question. But there are plenty of ways to cut those costs, including opting for breastfeeding, no bottles or formula to buy, and accepting all the hand-me-downs that are offered. New clothes start to look like hand-me-downs after a few spitting-up episodes anyway. If either of you plan to take extra time off from work, or to put career plans on hold for a while, and this concerns you from a financial standpoint, weigh it against the costs of high-quality childcare and commuting. The income lost may not be such a budget buster after all. Most important, instead of thinking of what you won't have in your life anymore, or won't have as much opportunity for, try to start thinking of what you will have in your life. A very special little person to share it with. Will your life be different? Definitely. Will it be better? No doubt about it.
All about your pampered pregnancy.
Talk about extreme makeovers. Pregnancy is a radical full body transformation that may have you feeling your most beautiful, you glow girl, your least attractive, those zits, those chin hairs, or both in the same day. But it's also a time when your usual beauty regimen might need a makeover. Before you reach into your medicine cabinet for the acne cream you've been using since middle school, or head to your favorite spa for a bikini wax and facial, you'll need to know what's a beauty do and what's a beauty don't when you're expecting. Here's the lowdown from tip, highlights, to toes, pedicure, on how you can pamper your pregnant self beautifully and safely. Your hair. When you're expecting, your hair can take a turn for the better. When lackluster hair suddenly sports a brilliant shine, or for the worst, when once bouncy hair goes limp. One thing's probably for sure. Thanks to hormones, you'll have more of it than ever before. And sadly, probably not just on your head. Here's a heads up on hair treatments. Coloring. Here's the root of the problem when it comes to hiding your roots during pregnancy. Even though no evidence suggests the small amount of chemicals absorbed through the skin during hair coloring is harmful when you're expecting, Some experts still advise waiting out the first trimester before heading back to the salon or reaching for your favorite drugstore formula for retouching. Others maintain that it's safe to dye throughout pregnancy. Check with your practitioner. You'll likely get the green light on color. If you're uncomfortable with a full dye job, consider highlights instead of a single process color. That way the chemicals won't touch your scalp at all, plus highlights tend to last longer than all-over color, which means you'll need fewer retouches during your pregnancy. You can also ask your colorist or beauty supply store about less harsh processing, an ammonia-free base or an all-vegetable dye, for instance. Just keep in mind that hormonal changes can make your hair react strangely, so you might not get what you expect, even from your regular formula. Try a small test area first so you don't wind up with a head full of punk purple instead of that ravishing red you were hoping for. Straightening treatments or relaxers. Thinking about a straightening treatment to calm those curls, though there's no evidence that hair relaxers are dangerous during pregnancy, the amount of chemicals that seep through the scalp and into the blood system is probably minimal. There's no proof they're completely safe either. Ditto for Brazilian keratin treatments. Many contain formaldehyde, which is probably not safe during pregnancy. Plus, the fumes can be intense. So check with your practitioner. You may hear that it's safer to let your hair do what comes naturally, especially during the first trimester. If you do decide to go straight, keep in mind that there's a possibility that your hormone-infused locks may respond oddly to the chemicals. You might end up with a helmet of frizz instead of ramrod straight tresses. Plus, your hair will grow faster during pregnancy, making those curls reappear at your roots sooner than you might like. Thermal reconditioning processes that involve different and often gentler chemicals to tame your frizz may be a safer option. Again, ask first. Or just buy a flat iron of your own and coax your hair into smooth submission. Permanence or body waves. So your hair is not as full as your figure's becoming? Ordinarily, a permanent or body wave might be the answer for hair that's limping, but it probably isn't during pregnancy. Not because it isn't safe, it probably is, so check with your practitioner, but because hair responds unpredictably under the influence of pregnancy hormones. A permanent might not take at all or might result in frizz instead of waves. Hair removal. If pregnancy has you looking like an extra from Planet of the Apes, stay calm. This hairy situation is only temporary. Your armpits, bikini line, upper lip, even your belly may be fuzzier than usual because of those raging hormones. Though some lucky moms-to-be find hair growth on their legs actually slows down. Rather not wear fur? No need to. You can safely turn to all those hair removal old reliables. Shaving, plucking, threading, and waxing. Even a full-on Brazilian wax is fine. Just proceed with care since pregnancy skin can be super sensitive and easily irritated. If you're heading to the salon, let the esthetician know you're expecting so she can be extra gentle. Wondering about other hair removal options? Like many cosmetic procedures and products, lasers, including at-home varieties, electrolysis, depilatories, and bleaching haven't been studied enough in pregnancy to prove their safety, so ask your practitioner for a deciding vote before opting in. Some practitioners give certain ones the all-clear after month 3, while others will advise holding off on all for the full 9 months. Eyelash treatments. As for the hair that no one can get enough of, you'll have to make do with the eyelashes you've got for now. The prescription eyelash growing treatment Latisse, as well as many other over-the-counter products touted to lengthen lashes, aren't recommended for expectant and breastfeeding moms because, you guessed it, they haven't been studied in pregnancy. It's probably also smart to avoid dyeing your eyelashes or brows. On the plus side, your lashes may be thicker than ever now that you're expecting. Your face. Your pregnancy may not be showing in your belly yet, but it's almost certainly showing on your face. Here's the good, the bad, and the blotchy about face care when you're expecting. A day at the spa. Ah, the spa. No one deserves and needs a day of pampering more than a mom-to-be. And happily, more and more spas are offering treatments specifically catering to the expectant set. But before you head off for your day of pregnant pampering, ask your practitioner for any specific caveats for your situation. Then when you call to make your appointment, tell the scheduler that you're expecting. Discuss any restrictions you may have so the spa can tailor treatments to fit your needs. Also, be sure to inform any esthetician or therapist who will be working on you that you're pregnant, even if you already mentioned it when making the appointment. Facials. Face fact. Not every mom-to-be is blessed with that expectant radiance you've always read about. If your glow decides not to show, a facial might be just the ticket, working wonders when it comes to clearing pores clogged by extra oil, thanks to extra hormones. Most facials are safe during pregnancy, as long as they don't incorporate any ingredients that might get the red light, such as retinoids or salicylic acid. Some of the more aggressively exfoliating treatments, like microdermabrasion or peels, might be especially irritating to skin made super sensitive by pregnancy hormones, leaving you less glowy, more red and blotchy. Facials that use an electrical microcurrent or lasers are off-limit during pregnancy. Ditto for at-home laser facials. Better to postpone these treatments until after pregnancy. Discuss with your esthetician which preparations might be most soothing and least likely to provoke a reaction. If you're unsure about a particular treatment's safety, check with your practitioner before signing up. Anti-wrinkle treatments. A wrinkly baby is cute. A wrinkly mommy, not so much. But before you stop by your dermatologist's office to treat those fine lines or fill those lips, consider this. The safety of injectable fillers such as collagen, Restylane, or Juvederm during pregnancy hasn't been established through studies yet. The same goes for Botox, which means you're better off staying unfilled and uninjected for now. As for anti-wrinkle creams, it's best to read the fine print and check with your practitioner. You'll likely be advised to bid a temporary farewell to products that contain vitamin A in any of its many retinoid forms, vitamin K, or salicylic acid, also called BHA or beta hydroxy acid. Check with your practitioner about other ingredients you're unsure about too. Most practitioners will green light products containing AHA, alpha hydroxy acid, or fruit acids, but get the all clear first. On the bright side, you may find that normal pregnancy fluid retention plumps up your face nicely, leaving your wrinkles less noticeable and your lips fuller without the help of cosmetic procedures. Acne treatments. Got more pimples than a high school marching band? You can blame pregnancy hormones for that. But before you march to the medicine cabinet for your usual zit-zappers, check them out with your practitioner. Exfoliating scrubs and products containing glycolic acid and fruit acids are probably safe to use, though watch out for irritation. Ditto some prescription products, azelaic and topical antibiotics such as erythromycin, which may be especially helpful when you've got acne to boot. Two active ingredients commonly found in topical acne medications, beta-hydroxy acid, BHA, and salicylic acid, are typically shelved during pregnancy. Ask your practitioner about the safety of products that contain these ingredients and those that contain benzoyl peroxide, the active ingredient in many pimple preparations and one that also often gets the red light during pregnancy. Accutane, which causes serious birth defects, is definitely off limits. So is Retin A. Ask your practitioner about over-the-counter products that contain retinol. Laser treatments and chemical peels for acne should also probably wait until after the baby is born. You can absolutely try to tame eruptions naturally by eating well. Some women find keeping sugar and refined grains to a minimum helps a lot, and keeping your face clean, but not over-scrubbed. And don't forget the oil-free moisturizer, since skin that's too dry can actually be more pimple-prone. And please, no popping or picking.
Making up for pregnancy. Between breakouts, funky skin discolorations, and normal pregnancy swelling, your face will be facing some challenges over the next 9 months. Luckily, you'll be able to make up for them with the right makeup. Go undercover. Corrective concealer and foundation can cover a multitude of pregnancy skin issues, including melasma, chloasma, and other discolorations. For those dark spots, look for brands that are designed to cover hyperpigmentation, but make sure all makeup is hypoallergenic. Match both to your skin tone, but select a concealer that's a shade lighter than your natural complexion. Apply the concealer only to the dark spots, stippling the edges to blend. Then lightly blend the foundation over the area. Less is definitely more when it comes to heavy coverage products, so use the least you can get away with. You can always top it off, set with powder. Keep coverage lighter when it comes to pregnancy pimples to avoid calling attention to them. They'll likely call enough attention to themselves. Start with foundation, then apply a concealer, one that matches your skin, directly to the zit, blending with your finger. If you're going to pre-spot before you cover up, use a pregnancy-approved topical that's clear. Play with shadows. Chip away at those chipmunk cheeks you'll likely be growing. After you've applied your all-over foundation, apply a highlighting shade, one shade lighter, to the center of your forehead, under your eyes, on the tops of your cheekbones, and on the tip of your chin. Then brush a contouring shade, one shade darker, down the sides of your face, starting at the temples and under your cheekbones. Blend, and presto, instant contours. Stop the spread. Sure, you expect your belly to plump up, and maybe even your hips, but your nose? Don't worry. Any widening is temporary, the result of pregnancy swelling. Slim a swollen sniffer by applying a highlighting shade, one shade lighter than your overall foundation, down the center of your nose. Then contour the vertical edges of the sides of your nose with a darker shade. Make sure you blend well.
Your teeth. You've got plenty to smile about now that you're expecting, but will your teeth be up for the exposure? Cosmetic dentistry is popular, but not always pregnancy approved. Whitening products. Eager to flash your pearly whites? While there are no proven risks to tooth whitening during pregnancy, it's a procedure that probably falls into the better safe than sorry category. So you'll be wise to wait a few months to debut that new million-dollar smile. Be sure to keep your teeth clean and well flossed, though. Your pregnancy-sensitive gums will thank you for the attention and for not exposing them to those irritating whitening products. Veneers. Here's one more for the better safe than sorry side, even though there are no proven risks to adding veneers to your teeth during pregnancy. There's another reason why you might consider waiting until you're postpartum before you veneer your teeth. Your gums might be extra sensitive when you've got a baby on board, making any dental procedure, including veneers and whitening, more uncomfortable than usual. Your body. Your body definitely pays for the privilege of pregnancy in ways you probably never imagined. So more than anybody, it deserves some pampering. Here's how to give it what it needs safely. Massage. Aching for some relief from that nagging backache or from that nagging anxiety that's keeping you up at night? There's nothing like a massage to rub away the aches and pains of pregnancy, as well as the stress and strain. But though a massage may be just what the feel-good doctor ordered, you'll need to follow some guidelines to ensure your pregnancy massages are not only relaxing, but also safe. Get rubbed by the right hands. Make sure your massage therapist is licensed and well-versed in the do's and don'ts of prenatal massage. Wait for your rub. Massage during the first 3 months of pregnancy may trigger dizziness and add to morning sickness, so it's best to hold off until the second trimester. But don't worry if you've already had a massage during your first trimester. Relax in the right position. It's best to avoid spending a lot of time on your back after the fourth month, so ask your massage therapist to use a table that's equipped with a cutout for your belly, special pillows designed for pregnancy use, or cushioned foam padding that conforms to your body, or to position you on one side. Try some nonsense. Ask for an unscented lotion or oil, not only because your pregnancy-sharpened sniffer might be offended by strong fragrances, but also because some aromatherapy oils can stimulate contractions. Rub the right spots and stay away from the wrong ones. Direct pressure on the area between the ankle bone and heel can trigger contractions, so be sure your therapist stays away from there. Another good reason to choose a massage therapist with prenatal training. Another spot to steer clear of, the abdomen, both for comfort's and safety's sake. There's a very slight risk that deep abdominal massage could trigger contractions or lead to other complications. And if your therapist is working too deeply, or if the massage is too intense, speak up. This is about you feeling good after all. Aromatherapy. When it comes to scents during pregnancy, it's good to use some common sense. Because the effect of many plant oils in pregnancy are unknown and some may be harmful, approach any kind of aromatherapy with caution. The following essential oils are considered safe for prenatal massage, though experts recommend that they be mixed at a concentration that's half the standard usage. Rose, lavender, chamomile, jasmine, tangerine, neroli, and ylang ylang. Pregnant women should particularly avoid the following oils because some of them can trigger uterine contractions. Basil, juniper, rosemary, sage, peppermint, pennyroyal, oregano, and thyme. Midwives often use these oils during labor precisely because they may trigger contractions. If you've had an aromatherapy massage with these oils or use them in home baths or treatments, don't worry. The absorption of the oil is very low, especially because the skin on your back is pretty thick. Just steer clear of them in future treatments. Scented lotions or beauty products sold at bath and beauty shops, like peppermint foot lotion, for instance, are fine since the scents aren't concentrated. Body treatments, scrubs, wraps, hydrotherapy. Body scrubs are generally safe as long as they're gentle. Some scrubs can be too rough on sensitive pregnant skin. Some wraps can be safe, but most are off-limits because they might raise your body temperature excessively. A short warm bath, no hotter than 100 degrees Fahrenheit, as part of hydrotherapy, is safe and relaxing, but stay out of the sauna, steam room, and hot tub. Tanning bed sprays, lotions. Looking for a way to go beyond the pale? Pale skin, that is, during your pregnancy? Sorry, but tanning beds are out. Not only are they bad for your health, they increase your risk of skin cancer, but they speed up the aging process and up your chances of getting melasma, the skin discoloration called the mask of pregnancy. Worse, tanning beds can raise your body temperature to a level that could be harmful to your developing baby. Still a fan of the tan? Before you fake it with sunless tanning lotions and sprays, talk to your practitioner. And even if you get the go-ahead, consider that your hormones can cause your skin to play games with the color and take a turn for the terracotta. Plus, as your belly expands, applying a sunless tanner evenly might get tricky, especially once you can no longer see your legs and even if you're getting a professional spray or airbrush tan. Your hands and feet. Yes, even your hands and feet will show the effect of pregnancy. Though you won't be able to see the effects on your feet as easily once you reach the third trimester. But even when you're feeling swell, as in fingers and ankles that are puffy with fluids, your hands and feet can still look their best. Manicure and pedicure. It's perfectly safe to polish while pregnant. And take advantage now because it's likely your nails are growing faster and stronger than ever. If you get your nails done in a salon, make sure it's a well-ventilated one. Inhaling those strong chemical smells is never a good idea, but especially not when you're breathing for two, and at the very least, the fumes might make you queasy. Do be sure the manicurist doesn't massage the area between your ankle bone and heel when you're getting your pedi. It could theoretically trigger contractions. And if you want your calluses removed, have the manicurist do so only with a pumice stone, not a blade, even if it's from a sterile pack and it's the disposable kind, since that can lead to infection. Never mind the fact that the more you cut calluses, the more they grow back. If you're worried about the fumes from regular nail polishes, check out the growing number of non-toxic polishes, as well as non-toxic polish removers. When it comes to long-lasting gel or shellac polish, there's no proven risk to pregnancy, but there could be to your skin if you're not careful. That's because the lights sometimes used to cure the gel polish emit UV light, the kind used in tanning booths and that has been implicated in premature aging and skin cancer. Plus, it could lead to blotchy hands during pregnancy. If you do gels, ask for specifically made gloves that cover your hands, exposing only your nails to the UV light, or frequent a salon that uses LED light that cures far faster. Also wise, getting the green light on gels from your practitioner, especially if you're thinking of getting them regularly during pregnancy. As for acrylics, there's no proof that the chemicals are harmful, but you might want to err on the cautious side and forgo those tips until post-baby. Not only because the application smell can be extremely strong, but because they can become a nail bed for infection, something you might be more prone to while you're expecting. And remember, you may not need the extra length or strength of acrylics anyway, because your nails will be growing at warp speed and may be stronger than ever.
Chapter 6. The second month. Approximately 5 to 8 weeks.
Even if you're not telling anyone you're expecting yet, and even though you're definitely not showing it, your baby's probably starting to spill the beans to you. Not in so many words, but in so many symptoms, like that nagging nausea that follows you wherever you go, or all that excess saliva pooling in your mouth. Am I drooling? Like that gotta-go feeling you're getting all day and all night. Those oh-so-tender nipples, or that 24/7 bloat you just can't seem to deflate. Even with the ever-growing evidence that you're pregnant, you're probably still getting used to the idea that a new life is growing inside of you. You're also probably just getting used to the demands of pregnancy, from the physical, so that's why I'm so tired, to the logistical. The shortest route to the bathroom is to the lifestyle. Make my sea breeze a virgin. It's a wild ride, and it's only just beginning. Hold on tight.
Your baby, the second month.
Week 5. Your little embryo, which at this point resembles a tadpole more than a baby, complete with a teeny tail, is growing fast and furiously, and is now about the size of an orange seed, still small, but exponentially larger than before. This week, the heart is starting to take shape. In fact, the circulatory system, along with the heart, is the first system to be operational. Your baby's heart, about the size of a poppy seed, is made up of 2 tiny channels called heart tubes, and though it's still far from fully functional, it's already beating, something you might be able to see on an early ultrasound. Also in the works is the neural tube, which will eventually become your baby's brain and spinal cord. Right now, the neural tube is open, but it will close by next week. Week 6. Crown, head, to rump, bottom measurements are used for babies in the first half of pregnancy because their tiny, newly forming legs are bent, making it difficult to estimate the full length of the body. How's baby measuring up this week? That crown-to-rump measurement has reached somewhere between 1/5 to 1/4 inch, no bigger than a nail head. This week also sees the beginning of the development of your baby's jaws, cheeks, and chin. Little indentations on both sides of the head will form into ear canals. Small black dots on the face will form the eyes, and a small bump on the front of the head will turn into a button nose in a few weeks' time. Also taking shape this week, your baby's kidneys, liver, and lungs. Your baby's tiny heart is beating 110 times per minute and getting faster each day, a stat that's probably got your heart racing. Week 7. Here's an amazing fact about your baby right now. He or she is 10,000 times bigger than at conception, about the size of a blueberry. A lot of that growth is concentrated on the head. New brain cells are being generated at the rate of 100 cells per minute. Your baby's mouth and tongue are forming this week, and so are arm and leg buds, which are beginning to sprout into paddle-like appendages and to divide into hand, arm, and shoulder segments, and leg, knee, and foot segments. Also in place now are your baby's kidneys, and they're poised to begin their important work of waste management, urine production, and excretion. At least you don't have to worry about dirty diapers yet. Week 8. Your baby is growing up a storm, this week measuring about 1/2 to 2/3 of an inch, or about the size of a large raspberry. And that sweet little raspberry of yours is looking less reptilian and more human, happily, as his or her lips, nose, eyelids, legs, and back continue to take shape. And though it's still too early to hear from the outside, your baby's heart is beating at the incredible rate of 150 to 170 times per minute. That's about twice as fast as your heart beats. Something else new this week, your baby is making spontaneous movements, twitches of the trunk and limb buds way too tiny for you to feel.
Your body, the second month.
What symptoms can you expect this month? Since every pregnancy is different, you may experience all of the following symptoms, or maybe just a few. Don't be surprised if you don't feel pregnant yet, no matter what your symptoms or lack of symptoms. Physically, fatigue, lack of energy, sleepiness, frequent urination, nausea, with or without vomiting, excess saliva, constipation, heartburn, indigestion, flatulence, bloating, food aversions and cravings, lots of breast changes, slight whitish vaginal discharge, occasional headaches, occasional lightheadedness or dizziness, a little rounding of your belly, your clothes feeling a little snugger. Emotionally. Emotional ups and downs like amped up PMS, which may include mood swings, irritability, irrationality, crying for no apparent reason, joy, excitement, apprehension, doubts, any or all of these. A sense of unreality about the pregnancy. Is there really a baby in there?
Your body this month. Even though you still won't look like you're pregnant to those around you, you might notice your clothes are getting a little tighter around the waist. You might also need a bigger bra now. By the end of this month, your uterus, usually the size of a fist, has grown to the size of a large grapefruit. If you'd like to see any of the illustrations from this chapter, you can download and print out a special PDF from the same Audible page where you purchased your audiobook. What you can expect at this month's checkup.
If this is your second prenatal visit, it's likely to be a much shorter one, unless you're getting a first trimester ultrasound to date your pregnancy. And if those initial tests have already been taken care of, you probably won't be subjected to much poking and prodding this time. You can expect your practitioner to check the following, though there may be variations depending on your particular needs and your practitioner's style of practice. Weight and blood pressure, urine for sugar and protein, hands and feet for swelling, and legs for varicose veins. Symptoms you've been experiencing, especially unusual ones. Questions or problems you want to discuss. Have a list ready.
What you may be wondering about, the second month.
Heartburn and other indigestion.
I have heartburn all the time. Why and what can I do about it?
No one does heartburn like a pregnant woman does heartburn. Not only that, but you're likely to keep doing it and doing it at least as well throughout your whole pregnancy. Unlike many early pregnancy symptoms, this one's a keeper. So why does it feel like you have a flamethrower stationed in your chest? Early in pregnancy, your body produces large amounts of the hormones progesterone and relaxin, which tend to relax smooth muscle tissue everywhere in the body, including the gastrointestinal GI tract. As a result, food sometimes moves more slowly through your system, resulting in indigestion issues of all kinds, from that bloated, gassy, full feeling to heartburn. This may be uncomfortable for you, but it's actually beneficial for your baby. The digestive slowdown allows for better absorption of nutrients into your bloodstream and subsequently through your placenta and into your baby. Heartburn occurs when the ring of muscle that separates the esophagus from the stomach relaxes, like all the other smooth muscle in the GI tract, allowing food and harsh digestive juices to back up from the stomach to the esophagus. These stomach acids irritate the sensitive esophageal lining. During the last two trimesters, heartburn can be compounded by your expanding uterus as it presses up on your stomach and crowds out the digestive system. It's nearly impossible to have an indigestion-free 9 months. Tummy troubles come with the pregnant territory. There are, however, some effective ways of avoiding heartburn and other indigestion most of the time and of minimizing the misery when it strikes. Don't pull the triggers. If a food or drink brings on the burn or other tummy troubles, take it off the menu for now. The most common offenders, and you're sure to know those that offend you, are spicy and highly seasoned foods, fried or fatty foods, processed meats, chocolate, coffee, carbonated beverages, and mint. Take it small. To avoid digestive system overload and backup of gastric juices, opt for frequent mini meals over 3 large squares. The 6-meal solution is ideal for heartburn and indigestion sufferers. Take it slow. When you eat too quickly, you tend to swallow air, which can form gas pockets in your belly. And rushing through meals means you're not chewing thoroughly, which makes your stomach work harder digesting your food and makes indigestion more likely to happen. So even when you're super hungry or in a super hurry, make an effort to eat slowly, taking small bites and chewing well. Your mother would be proud. Don't eat and drink at the same time. Too much fluid mixed with your food distends the stomach, aggravating indigestion. So try to drink most of your fluids in between meals. Keep it up. It's harder for gastric juices to back up when you're vertical than when you're horizontal. To keep them where they belong, down in your stomach, avoid eating while lying down, or lying down after eating, or eating a big meal before bed. Sleeping with your head and shoulders elevated about 6 inches can also fight the gastric backup with gravity. Another way, when picking something up, bend at the knees, not at the waist. Anytime your head dips, you're more likely to experience burn. Keep it down. Your weight gain, that is. A gradual and moderate weight gain will minimize the amount of pressure on your digestive tract. Keep it loose. Don't wear clothing that's tight around your belly or waist. A constricted tummy can add to the pressure and the burn. Pop some relief. Always keep a supply of Tums or Rolaids at popping distance. They'll also give you a healthy dose of calcium while they ease the burn. But avoid other heartburn medicines unless they've been cleared by your practitioner. Chew on it. Chewing sugarless gum for half an hour after meals can reduce excess acid. Increased saliva can neutralize the acid in your esophagus. Some people find that mint-flavored gum exacerbates heartburn. If so, choose a non-minty gum. Add almonds. Eat a few almonds after each meal, since these tasty nuts neutralize the juices in the stomach, which may relieve or even prevent heartburn. Or soothe with a small glass of almond milk after every meal or whenever heartburn hits. You'll get a calcium bonus. Some moms find cooling comfort in a glass of warm milk mixed with a tablespoon of honey. Others find sweet relief by eating fresh, dried, or freeze-dried papaya, which also scores vitamin A and C. Relax for relief. Stress compounds all gastric upset, so learning to chill can ease that burn. Also try some calm approaches such as meditation, visualization, acupuncture, biofeedback, or hypnosis.
Bringing up reflux. If you have GERD, gastroesophageal reflux disease, heartburn's nothing new, but treating it during pregnancy might be. Now that you're expecting, ask your practitioner about whether the prescription meds you're taking are still okay to take. Some are not recommended for use during pregnancy, but most are safe. Many of the tips for fighting heartburn can also help with your reflux. Heartburn today, hair tomorrow? Feeling the burn bad? You may want to stock up on baby shampoo. Research has actually backed up what old wives have maintained for generations. On average, the more heartburn you have during pregnancy, the more likely your baby will be born with a full head of hair. Implausible as it sounds, seems that the hormones responsible for heartburn are the same ones that cause fetal hair to sprout. So pass the Tums and the detangler.
Food aversions and cravings.
Certain foods that I've always loved taste strange now. Instead, I'm having cravings for foods that I never liked. What's going on?
The pregnancy cliche of a harried hubby running out in the middle of the night, parka over his pajamas, for a pint of ice cream and a jar of pickles to satisfy his wife's cravings has definitely played out more in the heads of old-school sitcom writers than in real life. Cravings don't always carry pregnant women or their spouses that far. Still, the majority of expectant moms find their tastes in food change somewhat in pregnancy, and some find that they change a lot. Most experience a craving for at least one food, most often ice cream, though usually without the pickles, and more than half will have at least one food aversion. Poultry ranks right up there, along with vegetables of all varieties. To a certain extent, these suddenly eccentric and sometimes borderline bizarre eating habits can be blamed on hormonal havoc, which probably explains why they're most common in the first trimester of first pregnancies, when that havoc is at its height. Hormones, however, may not tell the whole story. The long-held theory that cravings and aversions are sensible signals from our bodies, that when we develop a distaste for something, it's usually bad for us, and when we lust after something, it's usually something we need, often does seem to stand up. Like when you suddenly can't face the morning coffee you once couldn't face your morning without. Or when a glass of your favorite wine sips like vinegar. Or when you can't gobble up enough grapefruit. On the other hand, when you call foul at the sight of chicken or your beloved broccoli becomes bitter, or your cravings launch you into a full-fledged fudge frenzy, well, it's hard to credit your body with sending the smartest signals. The problem is that body signals relating to food are always hard to read when hormones are involved, and may be especially tough to call now that humans have departed so far from the food chain, and now that most food chains sell junk food. Before candy was invented, for instance, a craving for something sweet might have sent a pregnant woman foraging for berries. Now it's more likely to send her foraging for M&Ms. Do you have to ignore your cravings and aversions in the name of healthy pregnancy eating? Even if that were possible, hormone-induced food quirks are a powerful force. It wouldn't be fair. Still, it's possible to respond to them while also paying attention to your baby's nutritional needs. If you crave something healthy, cottage cheese by the carton or peaches by the pound, don't feel like you have to hold back. Go for the nutritious gusto, even if it means your diet's a little unbalanced for a while. You'll make up for the variety later on in pregnancy when the cravings calm down. If you crave something that you know you'd probably be better off without, then try to seek a substitute that speaks to the craving without throwing nutrition under the bus or filling you up with too many empty calories. Say, baked natural cheese puffs instead of the kind that turn your fingers orange. If substitutes don't fully satisfy, adding sublimation to the mix may be helpful. When moon pies howl your name at night, try doing something that takes your mind off them. Taking a brisk walk, chatting with message board buddies, checking out maternity jeans online. And of course, completely giving in to less nutritious cravings is fine, as is enjoying them, as long as your indulgences don't regularly take the place of nutritious foods in your diet. Most cravings and aversions disappear or weaken by the fourth month. Cravings that hang in there longer may be triggered by emotional needs, the need for a little extra attention, for example. If both you and your spouse are aware of this need, it should be easy to satisfy. instead of requesting a middle-of-the-night pint of Chunky Monkey, with or without the sour dills, you might settle for an oatmeal cookie or two and some quiet cuddling or romantic bath. Some women find themselves craving, even eating, such peculiar non-food substances as clay, ashes, and paper. Because this habit, known as pica, can be dangerous and may be a sign of nutritional deficiency, particularly of iron, report it to your practitioner. Craving ice may also mean you're iron deficient, so also report any compulsion to chew ice.
For dads, those crazy cravings. Have you noticed your spouse is gagging over foods she used to love? Or going gaga over foods she's never eaten before? Or eaten in such peculiar combinations? Try not to tease her about these cravings and aversions. She's as powerless to control them as you are to understand them. Instead, indulge her by keeping the offending foods out of smelling distance. Love chicken wings? Love them somewhere else. Surprise her with the pickle melon and Swiss sandwich she suddenly can't live without. Go the extra mile, or 2 miles, for that pineapple pizza, and you'll both feel better.
For dads, sympathy symptoms. Feeling curiously pregnant? Women may have a corner on the pregnancy market, but they don't have one on pregnancy symptoms. As many as half, or even more, of expectant fathers experience some degree of COVID syndrome, or sympathetic pregnancy, while their partners are pregnant. The symptoms of COVID can mimic virtually all the normal symptoms of pregnancy, including nausea and vomiting, abdominal pain, appetite changes, bloating, weight gain, food cravings, constipation, leg cramps, dizziness, fatigue, back pain, and mood swings. Which means your partner might not be the only one in your home growing a little belly, heaving at the sight of a burger, or running to the fridge for a midnight olive orgy, or all of the above. Any number of completely normal, if unexpected, emotions that have settled down in your psyche these days could trigger these symptoms. From sympathy, you wish you could feel her pain, and so you do, to anxiety, you're stressed about the pregnancy or about becoming a father, to jealousy, she's getting center stage and you'd like to share it. But there's more to sympathy symptoms than just sympathy, and other normal father-to-be feelings. Believe it or not, pregnancy gets a dad's-to-be's hormones talking too, stepping up his supply of estrogen. What can you do about those sympathy symptoms, besides stop bringing home cookies and cream in the economy tubs? Try channeling your sometimes uncomfortable feelings into productive pursuits, like cleaning out the garage or hitting the gym. Applying your sympathy to cooking dinner and scrubbing the toilet, and working through those anxieties by talking them out with your spouse, and with friends who are already dads, or connect with dads on social media. You'll also feel less left out by becoming more involved in the pregnancy and baby prep. Rest assured, all symptoms that don't go away during pregnancy will disappear soon after delivery, though you may find that others crop up postpartum. And don't stress out if you don't have a single sick or queasy or achy day during your partner's pregnancy. Not suffering from morning sickness or putting on weight doesn't mean you don't empathize and identify with your spouse or that you're not destined for nurturing. Just that you've found other ways to express your feelings. Every expectant dad, like every expectant mom, is different.
Visible veins.
I have unsightly blue lines all over my breasts and belly. Is that normal?
Not only are these veins, which can make your chest and belly look like a road map, normal and nothing to worry about, but they are a sign that your body is doing what it should. They're part of the network of veins that has expanded to carry the increased blood supply of pregnancy, which will be nourishing your baby. They may show up earlier and be more prominent in slim or fair-skinned moms-to-be. In other expectant moms, particularly those who are dark-skinned or overweight, the veins may be less visible or not noticeable at all, or they may not become obvious until later in pregnancy. Spider veins.
Since I became pregnant, I've got awful-looking spidery purplish lines on my thighs. Are they varicose veins?
They aren't pretty, but they aren't varicose veins. They're probably spider nevi, commonly dubbed spider veins for obvious reasons. What might prompt spider veins to spin their purplish red web across your legs during pregnancy? First, the increased volume of blood that you're carrying can create significant pressure on blood vessels, causing even tiny veins to swell and become visible. Second, pregnancy hormones can do a number on all your blood vessels, big and small. And third, genetics can predispose you to spider veins at any time in your life, but especially during pregnancy. Thanks, Mom. If you're destined to have spider veins, there's not much you can do to avoid them altogether, but there are ways to minimize their spread. Since your veins are as healthy as your diet is, try eating enough vitamin C foods. The body uses it to manufacture collagen and elastin, important connective tissues that help repair and maintain blood vessels. Exercising regularly to improve circulation and leg strength and getting into the habit of not crossing your legs, which restricts blood flow, will also help keep spider veins at bay. Prevention didn't do the trick. Some, though far from all, spider veins fade and disappear after delivery. If they don't, they can be treated by a dermatologist either with the injection of saline, sclerotherapy, or glycerin, or with the use of a laser. These treatments destroy the blood vessels, causing them to collapse and eventually disappear, but they're not cheap and aren't recommended during pregnancy. In the meantime, you can try camouflaging your spider veins with a flesh-toned concealer or an airbrush makeup for legs, designed to cover all kinds of imperfections. Varicose veins.
My mother and grandmother both had varicose veins during pregnancy. Is there anything I can do to prevent them in my own pregnancy?
Varicose veins run in families, and it definitely sounds like they have legs in yours. But being genetically predisposed to varicose veins doesn't mean you have to be resigned to them, which is why you're wise to be thinking now about bucking this family tradition with prevention. Varicose veins often surface for the first time during pregnancy, and they tend to get worse in subsequent pregnancies. That's because the extra volume of blood you produce during pregnancy puts extra pressure on your blood vessels, especially the veins in your legs, which have to work against gravity to push all that extra blood back to your heart. Add to that the pressure your growing uterus will be putting on your pelvic blood vessels and the vessel-relaxing effects of the extra hormones your body is producing, and you have the perfect recipe for varicose veins. The symptoms of varicose veins aren't difficult to recognize, but they vary in severity. There may be a mild achiness or severe pain in the legs, or a sensation of heaviness or swelling, or none of these. A faint outline of bluish veins may be visible, or snake-like veins may bulge from ankle to upper thigh. In severe cases, the skin overlying the veins becomes swollen, dry, and irritated. Occasionally, superficial thrombophlebitis, inflammation of a surface vein caused by a blood clot, may develop at the site of a varicosity, so always check with your practitioner about varicose vein symptoms. To give your legs a leg up against varicose veins, keep the blood flowing. Too much sitting or standing can compromise blood flow, so avoid long periods of either when you can, and when you can't, periodically flex your ankles. When sitting, avoid crossing your legs and elevate them if possible. When lying down, raise your legs by placing a pillow under your feet. When resting or sleeping, try to lie on your left side, the best one for optimum circulation, though either side will do. Watch your weight. Excess poundage increases the demand on your already overworked circulatory system, so keep your weight gain within the recommended guidelines. Avoid heavy lifting, which can make those veins bulge. Push gently during bowel movements. Straining on the toilet can be a strain on those deep leg veins, so take steps to avoid constipation. Wear support pantyhose. Light support hose seems to work well without being uncomfortable, or elastic stockings. Put them on first thing in the morning before blood pools in your legs, and take them off at night before getting into bed. While wearing support hose probably won't contribute to your sexiest pregnancy moment, it may help by counteracting the downward pressure of your belly and giving the veins in your legs a little extra upward push. Plus, support hose have come a long way in style and comfort since Grandma's day. Stay away from clothes that might restrict your circulation. Tight belts or pants, pantyhose and socks with elastic tops, and snug shoes. Also skip high heels, favoring flats. Choose ones with good arch support, medium chunky heels, or low wedges instead. Get some exercise every day, but if you're experiencing pain, avoid high-impact cardio, jogging, cycling, and weight training. Be sure your diet includes plenty of fruits and vegetables rich in vitamin C, which help keep blood vessels healthy and elastic. Surgical removal of varicose veins isn't recommended during pregnancy, though it can certainly be considered a few months after delivery. In most cases, however, the problem will improve after delivery, usually by the time pre-pregnancy weight is reached. An achy, swollen pelvis.
My whole pelvic area feels achy and swollen and really uncomfortable, and I think I felt an actual bulge in my vulva. What is that all about?
Legs may have the market share of varicose veins, but they definitely don't have a monopoly. Varicose veins can also appear in the pelvic area, in the vulva and the vagina, on the buttocks, and in the rectum for the same reason you might get them in your legs. And it sounds like they've made that appearance in you. Called pelvic congestion syndrome, the symptoms, in addition to bulging in the vulva, include chronic pelvic pain and/or abdominal pain, an achy, swollen, full feeling in the pelvic area and the genitals, and sometimes pain with or after intercourse. The tips for minimizing varicose veins in the legs will also help you, but do be sure to check with your practitioner both for the diagnosis and for possible treatment options, usually after delivery. Breakouts.
My skin is breaking out the way it did when I was in middle school. Not cute.
The glow of pregnancy that some women are lucky enough to radiate isn't just a result of joy, but of the stepped-up secretion of oils brought on by hormonal changes. And so, alas, are the less-than-glowing breakouts of pregnancy that some not-so-lucky expectant mamas experience, particularly those who break out like clockwork before their periods. Though such eruptions are hard to eliminate entirely, the following suggestions may help keep them at a minimum and keep you from resembling your eighth-grade yearbook picture. Wash your face 2 or 3 times a day with a gentle cleanser. But don't get over-aggressive with scrubs, not only because your skin is extra sensitive during pregnancy, but because over-stripped skin is actually more susceptible to breakouts. Get the all-clear on any acne medications, topical or oral, before you use them. Use an oil-free moisturizer to keep skin hydrated. Skin that's dried out by harsh acne cleansers and treatments can become more pimple-prone. Choose skincare products and cosmetics that are oil-free and labeled non-comedogenic, which means they won't clog pores. Keep everything that touches your face clean, including those blush brushes at the bottom of your makeup bag. Pop and pick not. Just like your mother always told you, popping or picking at pimples won't make them go away, and can actually make them stick around longer by pushing bacteria back down into the zit. Plus, when you're pregnant, you're more prone to infections. Poked at pimples can also leave scars. Feed your pregnant face well. A diet that's low in sugar, loaded with fruits and vegetables, and favors whole grains and healthy fats, think the pregnancy diet, may help minimize those hormonal breakout performances. Got acne that just won't back off? Besides being faithful to cleanliness and healthy eating habits, ask your practitioner or dermatologist who knows you're expecting about pregnancy-safe creams that might work. Most practitioners give the okay to azelaic acid. The doc might also suggest you wash your back or chest if that's where the pimples are popping up, with a glycolic or fruit acid-based cleanser to help clear those angry red bumps. Dry skin.
My skin is really dry.
Is that pregnancy related too?
Feeling a tad reptilian these days? You can blame your hormones for your dry, often itchy skin. Hormonal changes can sometimes rob your skin of oil and elasticity, giving it that not-so-lovely mama alligator look. To keep your skin as soft as your baby-to-be's bottom, switch to a non-soap cleanser such as Cetaphil or Aquanil and use it no more than once a day, at night if you're taking off makeup. Wash with just water the rest of the time. Slather on moisturizer while your skin is still damp after a bath or shower, and use the moisturizer as often as you can, and definitely before you turn in for the night. Cut down on bathing and keep your showers short. Too much washing can dry out skin. Make sure, too, that the water is lukewarm and not hot. Hot water removes natural oil from the skin, making it dry and itchy. Add unscented bath oils to your tub, but be careful with the slippery surface you've created. Remember, as your belly grows, so will your klutz factor. Drink plenty of fluids throughout the day to stay hydrated, and be sure to include good fats in your diet. Those omega-3s that are so baby-friendly are also skin-friendly. Keep your home well humidified. Wear a sunscreen with an SPF of at least 30 every day. Eczema.
I've always been prone to eczema, but now that I'm pregnant, it's gotten much worse. What can I do?
Unfortunately, pregnancy, or more accurately, its hormones, often exacerbates the symptoms of eczema. And for women who suffer from the skin condition, the itching and scaling can become practically unbearable. Some lucky eczema sufferers actually find that pregnancy causes the eczema to go into remission. Fortunately, low-dose hydrocortisone creams and ointments are safe to use during pregnancy in moderate amounts. Ask your practitioner or dermatologist for a recommendation. Antihistamines may also be helpful in coping with the itchiness, but again, be sure to check with your practitioner first. Most other options are off the table now that you're expecting. For instance, cyclosporin, long used on severe cases of eczema that don't respond to other treatment, is generally not prescribed during pregnancy. Non-steroidals, Protopic and Elidel, aren't recommended either because they haven't been studied in pregnancy and can't be ruled safe until more is known. Finally, some topical and systemic antibiotics may be shelved during pregnancy, so get your practitioner's clearance on those too before using. If you're an eczema sufferer, you know that prevention can go a long way in keeping that itch away. Try the following. Use a cold compress, not your fingers, to curb the itch. Scratching makes the condition worse and can puncture the skin, allowing bacteria to enter and cause an infection. Keep nails short and rounded to decrease the chance that you'll puncture your skin when you do scratch. Limit contact with potential irritants such as household cleansers, soaps, perfumes, and fruit juices. Wear gloves to protect your hands when cooking and cleaning. Moisturize early and often. While skin is still damp if you're just out of the water, to lock in the skin's own moisture. Limit time in the water, especially very warm water. Try not to get too hot or sweaty. Of course, that's easier said than done when you're pregnant and already one hot, sweaty mama. Stay cool by wearing loose cotton clothes and avoiding synthetic fabrics, wool, or any scratchy material. Avoid overheating by favoring that layered look and peeling off layers as you start to warm up. Try to keep your cool, too, when it comes to stress, a common eczema trigger. When you feel anxiety creeping in, take some relaxation breaths. Seek alternatives. Acupuncture may work to decrease nerve pain and moderate the itch, and it also helps relieve stress. Do a diet check. If you're allergic to a certain food or suspect you are, cut it out to see if that helps curb your eczema. Though diet seems to have less effect on eczema than internet legend would have you believe, it's worth asking your dermatologist whether a change in what you're eating might help. Ask too about adding probiotics to your diet. Though studies have not yet shown that probiotics ease a mom's eczema, they may help reduce the chances that your baby-to-be will develop eczema later on. Vitamin D supplementation, though still a bit controversial, has shown some promise as a treatment for eczema, but check with your practitioner first. Something else to keep in mind. Though eczema is hereditary, meaning that your baby has a chance of having it too, research suggests that breastfeeding may prevent eczema from developing in a child. That's just one more good reason to opt for breastfeeding if you can. Come and go belly.
It's the strangest thing. One day it'll look like I'm showing, and the next day my belly will be completely flat again. What's up with that?
What's up, actually, are your bowels. Bowel distension, the result of constipation and excess gas, two of a newly pregnant woman's constant companions, can make a flat belly round in no time flat. And just as quickly as it appeared, your belly can disappear, once you've had a bowel movement, that is. A little unnerving, yes, but I looked pregnant just yesterday, but completely normal. Don't worry, pretty soon you'll have a belly that doesn't come and go, and that's more baby than bowel.
A pregnant pose. Maybe you've been dodging the camera lately. No need to put yet another 10 pounds on me. Still, you might consider preserving your pregnancy bump for posterity. Sure, you don't have much to show for pregnancy yet, if anything, but taking bump shots right from the start means you'll have plenty to show for it later. Snap them daily, weekly, or monthly, selfie style in the mirror, or with the help of a friend, bump bared or wearing something form-fitting. Then compile your photos in a pregnancy album or custom photo book. Post them online for easy viewing by family and friends, or turn them into a video to track your amazing pregnancy story. Lights, camera, baby. Belly piercings. It's cool, it's stylish, it's sexy, and it's one of the cutest ways to show off a flat, toned tummy. But once your belly starts to bulge, will you have to remove your belly piercing? Nope, not as long as your belly piercing is healed. Read, your trip to the piercing pavilion wasn't last month. And healthy, in other words, not red, weeping, or inflamed. Remember, your belly button marks where you connected to your own mom in the womb, not where your baby connects to you, which means a piercing won't provide a path for pathogens to reach your baby. You also don't have to worry about a belly ring interfering with birth or even a cesarean delivery. Of course, as your pregnancy progresses and your tummy starts to jut out in earnest, you may find that your belly bar or belly ring becomes too uncomfortable to wear, thanks to your stretch-to-the-limit skin. The belly ring might also start to rub and even get caught on your clothing, especially when your belly button pops out later in pregnancy, and that rubbing can hurt big time. If you do decide to take out the jewelry entirely, just run your belly ring through the hole every few days to keep the piercing from closing up shop, unless you've had it for a number of years, in which case the likelihood that the hole will close is pretty slim. Or consider replacing your bar or ring with a flexible belly bar made of Teflon, or PTFE, polytetrafluoroethylene. As for getting your belly or anywhere else on your body pierced during pregnancy, better to hold off until after delivery. It's never a good idea to puncture the skin unnecessarily during pregnancy because it ups the chances of infection. Too late? You've already commemorated your pregnancy with a fresh piercing, or you pierced just before finding out you were expecting? If the area is not healed yet, it's still red, it's probably best to take the piercing out and re-pierce after delivery, not only because of the increased risk of infection, but because the stretching of your belly can stretch a still unhealed hole, leaving it much larger than you'd probably like it to be, as in gaping.
Losing your shape.
Will I ever get my body back after I have a baby?
Well, that kind of depends on you. Studies show that 25% of all moms of 2 to 3-year-olds are still hanging on to 10-plus pounds of their pregnancy weight. And most new moms find that even if they've gotten close to their pre-pregnancy weight, their tummy and hips and butt aren't exactly the same after pregnancy. But now's not the time to worry about what will happen after pregnancy. Focus instead on gaining the right amount of weight, at the right rate, on the right foods. Not only will that enable you to keep your eyes on the real prize, the healthy nourishment of your baby, but it'll also increase your chances of recovering your pre-pregnancy shape and even bettering it once baby is born. Want to up the odds even more? Team your sensible eating efforts with pregnancy-approved exercise and try as best as you can to keep up your regimen after your baby arrives. Mind you, that recovery won't happen overnight. Think 3 months as the best-case scenario, 6 months a more realistic one, and a lot longer than that, a real possibility.
First trimester ultrasound. You certainly won't be able to make out any adorable baby features yet, or find out whether you're boarding a boy or a girl, but you're still probably pretty excited to know that early ultrasounds, at about 6 to 9 weeks, have become a routine part of prenatal care, allowing eager parents a welcome first glimpse at their still teeny baby bean. In fact, ACOG recommends that all moms-to-be receive an early ultrasound. The top reason why? Combined with an LMP, measurement of the embryo or fetus during early pregnancy, is the most accurate way to date a pregnancy. After the first trimester, ultrasound measurements of the fetus are less accurate. An early ultrasound is also used to visualize a heartbeat, as well as to confirm that the pregnancy is taking place where it's supposed to, in the uterus, and to rule out an ectopic or tubular pregnancy. And if you're carrying twins or more, an early ultrasound will issue that double baby bulletin sooner. How does ultrasound get a picture of life inside your uterus? Through sound waves emitted by a transducer wand, which bounce off structures, your baby, the gestational sac, and so on, to produce an image that can be viewed on a video screen. If you're getting an ultrasound before week 6 or 7, it's likely you'll have a transvaginal one. In transvaginal ultrasound, a long, narrow transducer wand, covered first with a condom-like cover and sterile lubricant, is inserted into the vagina. The practitioner will gently move the wand within the vaginal canal to scan your uterus, allowing for an extra early view of your baby. After week 6 or 7, you'll probably be a candidate for the transabdominal version. For a transabdominal early ultrasound, your bladder must be full, which isn't fun, so the still small uterus can be seen more easily. Gel, some practitioners warm it up first, otherwise it's chilly, is spread on your abdomen, and then the transducer wand is rubbed over it. Both procedures can last from 5 to 30 minutes and are painless, except for the discomfort of the full bladder necessary for the first trimester transabdominal exam, and possibly the discomfort of the vaginal transducer. You'll be able to watch along with your practitioner, though you'll likely need help figuring out what you're seeing, and probably take home a small printout as a souvenir. While most practitioners will wait until at least 6 weeks to order an early ultrasound, it's possible to see a gestational sac as early as 4.5 weeks after a last menstrual period, and a heartbeat as early as 5 to 6 weeks, though it isn't always detected that early.
Difficulty urinating.
The last few days, it's been really hard to pee, even though my bladder seems very full.
Sounds like your bladder may be under pressure from your uterus. About 1 in 5 women have a tilted, aka retroverted uterus, one that tilts towards the back instead of the front. When it refuses to right itself, a tilted uterus can press on the urethra, the tube leading from the bladder. The pressure of this ever heavier load can make it feel harder to pee. Urine may also leak when the bladder becomes very overloaded. In nearly all cases, the uterus shifts itself back into position by the end of the first trimester without any medical intervention. But if you're really uncomfortable now, or if you're finding it especially difficult to urinate, put in a call to your practitioner. He or she might be able to manipulate your uterus by hand to move it off the urethra so you can pee easily again. Most of the time that works. In the unlikely event that it doesn't, catheterization, removing the urine through a tube, may become necessary. One other possibility if you're having trouble peeing, and another good reason to put in that call to your practitioner, a UTI, or urinary tract infection.
What's a corpus luteum cyst? If your practitioner said that your ultrasound shows you have a corpus luteum cyst, your first question will probably be, what is it? Well, here's all you need to know. Every month of your reproductive life, a small, yellowish body of cells forms after you ovulate. Called a corpus luteum, literally yellow body, it occupies the space in the follicle formerly occupied by the egg. The corpus luteum produces progesterone and some estrogen, and it is programmed by nature to disintegrate in about 14 days. When it does, diminishing hormone levels trigger your period. When you become pregnant, the corpus luteum hangs around instead of disintegrating, continuing to grow and produce enough hormones to nourish and support your baby-to-be until the placenta takes over. In most pregnancies, the corpus luteum starts to shrink around 6 or 7 weeks after the LMP and stops functioning altogether at about 10 weeks when its work of providing board for baby is done. But in about 10% of pregnancies, the corpus luteum doesn't regress when it's supposed to. Instead, it develops into a corpus luteum cyst. So now that you know what a corpus luteum cyst is, you're probably wondering, how will it affect my pregnancy? The answer? It probably won't at all. The cyst is usually nothing to worry about or do anything about. Chances are, it will go away by itself in the second trimester. But just to be sure, your practitioner will keep an eye on its size and condition regularly via ultrasound, which means you get extra peeks at your baby. Some moms-to-be report an ovulation-like pinching sensation on one side of their lower abdomen early in pregnancy that may be related to the corpus luteum or to a corpus luteum cyst. Again, nothing to worry about, but mention it to your practitioner for reassurance.
Mood swings.
I know I should feel happy about my pregnancy, and sometimes I am, but other times I feel so weepy and sad.
They're up and they're down. The very normal mood swings of pregnancy can take your emotions places they've never gone before, both to exhilarating highs and depressing lows. Moods that can have you over the moon one moment, down in the dumps the next, and weeping inexplicably over insurance commercials in between. Can you blame it on your hormones? You bet. These swings may be more pronounced in the first trimester when hormonal havoc is at its peak, and in general, in women who ordinarily experience emotional ups and downs before their periods. It's sort of like PMS pumped up. Feelings of ambivalence about the pregnancy once it's confirmed are common even when a pregnancy is planned, and may exaggerate the swings even more. Not to mention all those changes you're experiencing, the physical ones, the emotional ones, the logistical ones, the relationship ones, all of which can overwhelm your moods. Mood swings tend to moderate somewhat after the first trimester, once hormone levels calm down a little, and once you've adjusted to some of those pregnancy changes, you'll never adjust to all of them. In the meantime, though there's no sure way to hop off that emotional roller coaster, there are several ways to minimize the mood mayhem. Keep your blood sugar up. What does blood sugar have to do with moods? A lot. Dips in blood sugar caused by long stretches between meals can lead to mood crashes. Yet another compelling reason to ditch your usual 3 meals a day or fewer eating routine and switch to the 6 meals solution. Keep complex carbs and protein in starring roles in your mini meals so that your blood sugar and mood stay stable. Keep dietary sugar and caffeine consumption down. That candy bar, that giant cookie, that Coke will give your blood sugar a quick spike, followed soon after by a downward spiral that can take your mood down with it. Caffeine, especially when it's combined with sugar, as in that mocha iced blended, can have the same effect, adding to mood instability. So limit both for happier results. Eat well. In general, eating well will help you feel your best emotionally, as well as physically. So follow the pregnancy diet as best you can. Getting plenty of omega-3 fatty acids in your diet from walnuts, fish, grass-fed beef, and enriched eggs, to name a few foods, may also help with mood moderating. Plus, they're also super important for your baby's brain development. Studies have shown that a daily dose of dark chocolate can also help boost your mood. Get a move on. The more you move, the better your mood. That's because exercise releases feel-good endorphins, which can send your spirits soaring. Build practitioner-approved exercise into your day every day. Get a groove on. If you're in the mood for love and not too busy puking, sex can turn that frown upside down by releasing happy hormones. It can also bring you closer to your partner at a time when your relationship may be facing new challenges. If sex isn't in the cards or sexy isn't what you're feeling at the moment, the power of touch in any form, cuddling, hugging, holding hands, can help boost your mood. Light up your life. Research has shown that sunlight can actually lighten your moods. When the sun's shining, try catching some daily rays. Just don't forget to apply sunscreen first. Talk about it. Worried, anxious, feeling unsettled, unsure? Pregnancy is a time of many mixed emotions, which play out in mood swings. Venting some of those feelings to your spouse, who's probably feeling plenty of the same things, to friends who can relate, to other expectant moms on the whattoexpect.com message boards, can help you feel better, or at least help you see that what you're feeling is normal. On the other hand, if you're finding that too much message board surfing makes waves with your emotions, you're always worrying about having what she's having or not having what she's having, symptom-wise, consider taking a board break. Rest up. Fatigue can exacerbate normal pregnancy mood swings, so make sure you're getting enough sleep, but not too much, since that can actually increase emotional instability. Learn to relax. Stress can definitely take your moods down, so find ways of moderating it or coping with it better. If there's one person in your life who is more affected and bewildered by your mood swings than you are, it's probably your partner. It'll help for him to understand why you're acting the way you are these days, that surges of pregnancy hormones are holding your emotions hostage. But it'll also help for him to know exactly how he can help you. So tell him what you need, more help around the house, a night out at your favorite restaurant, and what you don't need right now, hearing that your rear's looking a little wide or seeing a trail of socks and underwear down the hallway. What makes you feel better and what makes you feel worse? And be specific. Even the most loving spouse isn't a mind reader.
For dads, rolling with her mood swings. Welcome to the wonderful and sometimes wacky world of pregnancy hormones. Wonderful because they're working hard to nurture the tiny life that's taken up residence in your partner's belly, and that you'll soon be cuddling in your arms. Wacky because in addition to taking control of her body, and often making her miserable, they're also taking control of her mind, making her weepy, over-the-top excited, disproportionately pissed, deliriously happy, and stressed out. And that's all before lunch. Not surprisingly, an expectant mom's mood swings are usually the most pronounced during the first trimester, when those pregnancy hormones are in their greatest state of flux, and when she's just getting used to them. But even once the hormones have settled down in the second and third trimesters, you can still expect to be riding the emotional roller coaster with your partner, which will continue to take her to emotional highs and lows, and fuel those occasional outbursts, right up until delivery and beyond. So what's an expectant dad to do? Here are some suggestions. Be patient. Pregnancy won't last forever, though there will be times in the ninth month where you both may wonder if it will. This too shall pass, and it'll pass a lot more pleasantly if you're patient. In the meantime, try to keep your perspective, and do whatever you can to channel your inner saint. Don't take her outbursts personally. And don't hold them against her. They are, after all, completely out of her control. Remember, it's the hormones talking, and crying for no apparent reason. Avoid pointing out her moods, too. Though she's powerless to control them, she's also probably all too aware of them, and chances are she's no happier about them than you are. It's no picnic being pregnant. Help slow down the swings. Since low blood sugar can send her mood swinging, offer her a snack when she's starting to droop. A plate of crackers and cheese, a fruit and yogurt smoothie. Exercise can release those feel-good endorphins she's in need of now, so suggest a before or after dinner walk. Also a good time to let her vent fears and anxieties that might be dragging her down. Go the extra yard. That is, go to the laundry room, to her favorite takeout on the way home from work, to the supermarket on Saturday, to the dishwasher to unload. You get the picture. Not only will she appreciate the efforts you make without being asked, but you'll appreciate her happier mood.
Pregnancy depression.
I expected some mood swings with pregnancy, but I'm not just a little down. I'm depressed all the time.
Every expectant mom has her ups and downs, and that's normal. But if your lows are consistent or frequent, you may be among the 10 to 15% of women who battle mild to moderate depression during pregnancy, and that's not something to write off as part of the pregnancy package. True depression shows up in a variety of symptoms, both emotional and physical, that go well beyond standard mom-to-be moodiness. These can include feeling sad, empty, hopeless, and emotionally lethargic, having sleep disturbances, you feel like sleeping all the time or you can't sleep at all, having a change in eating habits, you don't feel like eating at all or you're eating all the time, feeling fatigued and lacking energy above what's normal in pregnancy, and or feeling agitated or restless, losing interest in work, friends, family, and activities you usually enjoy, losing concentration and focus, having exaggerated mood swings, more dramatic than what's normal in pregnancy, and even having self-destructive thoughts. There may also be unexplained aches and pains. Having had mood disorders in the past or having a family history of mood disorders can increase your chances of depression during pregnancy. Other factors can contribute too, including stress, financial, relationship, work, or family, lack of emotional support, anxiety over your health or babies, especially if you've had complications or pregnancy losses in the past, or having pregnancy symptoms that are severe or complications that require lots of extra medical screening, hospitalization, or bed rest. If you believe that what you're experiencing is depression, or even if you think you might be, start by trying the tips for dealing with mood swings. If mild to moderate symptoms continue for longer than 2 weeks, speak to your practitioner about treatment options or ask for a referral to a therapist. Don't wait to call if the symptoms are more serious. For instance, you're unable to function or care for yourself and your baby, or you're having thoughts about harming yourself. Since thyroid conditions, which are fairly common and can be easily treated, can trigger depression, a thyroid panel may be done to rule that out first. Ask for one if it's not offered. Getting the right help and getting it promptly is important, not only for your sake, but for your baby's. Depression can keep you from taking optimum care of yourself and your baby, now and after delivery. In fact, depression during pregnancy can increase risks for complications, much as depression can adversely affect your health when you're not pregnant. Continued extreme emotional stress can also negatively impact baby's growth and development. Happily, there are plenty of effective strategies for treating pregnancy depression. Finding the right treatment or combination of treatments can help you feel better so you can begin enjoying your pregnancy. Options include supportive therapy. Every treatment plan for depression should include regular visits with an experienced therapist, and it's always the first-line treatment for mild to moderate pregnancy depression. No matter what's triggering your depression, therapy can help you sort through and deal with the feelings you're having and help you cope with them. Under the ACA, most insurance plans should offer some level of coverage for mental health therapy, though it varies widely depending on your state and insurance. Medication. Deciding whether therapy is enough or whether antidepressant medication will be part of the treatment plan and which one to use will require consulting with both your practitioner and your therapist to weigh possible risks against possible benefits. CAM therapies, meditation and other relaxation techniques, yoga, acupuncture, music therapy. These are just some of the CAM therapies that can help relieve symptoms of depression safely. Bright light therapy can also be surprisingly effective in reducing symptoms of pregnancy depression by increasing levels of serotonin, the mood-regulating hormone in the brain, and it's safe and simple. All you do is sit about 2 feet away from a special full-spectrum bright light, one that's 20 times brighter than normal room lighting, for 10 to 45 minutes a day, depending on your response. Don't, however, turn to herbal supplements touted for their mood-boosting properties such as SAMI and St. John's wort without your practitioner's approval. They haven't been studied enough to consider them safe for pregnancy use. Exercise. Besides being good for your body and health, exercise has been shown to be a potent mood booster, releasing feel-good endorphins. Healthy eating. It probably won't be the first line of treatment for depression, but eating foods rich in omega-3 fatty acids may help ease pregnancy depression and possibly postpartum depression too. And since those foods are baby healthy anyway, it definitely couldn't hurt to try adding them to the mood boosting mix. You can also ask your practitioner about taking a pregnancy safe omega-3 supplement. Eating dark chocolate, the higher the cocoa content, the better, may help boost mood and reduce anxiety too. Being depressed during pregnancy does somewhat increase the chances of postpartum depression, PPD. But the happy news is that getting the right treatment during pregnancy and or right after delivery can help prevent PPD. Some doctors prescribe low doses of antidepressants to women with a history of depression as a preventive measure starting during the second trimester, while others recommend that women who are at high risk take antidepressants right after delivery to prevent PPD. Ask your practitioner about this.
Panic attacks. Pregnancy can be a time of high anxiety, especially for those who are expecting for the first time and consequently don't know what to expect. And a certain amount of worry is normal and probably unavoidable. But what about when that worry turns to panic? If you've had panic attacks in the past, you're probably all too aware of the symptoms, and most women who have panic attacks during pregnancy have had them before. They're characterized by intense fear or discomfort, accompanied by an accelerated heart rate, sweating, trembling, shortness of breath, feeling of choking, chest pain, nausea or abdominal distress, dizziness, numbness or tingling, or chills, or hot flashes that appear seemingly out of the blue. They can be incredibly unsettling, of course, particularly when they strike for the first time during pregnancy. But happily, though they definitely affect you, there is no reason to believe that panic attacks affect the development of your baby in any way. Still, if you do experience such an attack, tell your practitioner. Therapy is always the first choice during pregnancy, and other times too. But if medications are necessary to ensure your well-being and your baby's, if anxiety is keeping you from eating or sleeping or otherwise taking care of your precious cargo, your practitioner, together with a qualified therapist, can work with you to decide which medication offers the most benefits for the fewest risks and how low a dose you can take and still derive those benefits. If you've been on a medication for panic attacks, anxiety, or depression pre-pregnancy, a change or an adjustment of dose might be necessary too. While medication is one solution to extreme anxiety, it certainly isn't the only one. There are many non-drug alternatives that can be used instead of or in conjunction with traditional therapy. These include eating well and regularly, including plenty of omega-3 fatty acids, and some dark chocolate in your diet may be especially helpful. Avoiding too much sugar and caffeine in particular can trigger anxiety, getting regular exercise, and learning meditation and other relaxation techniques. Prenatal yoga can be incredibly calming and can teach you the kind of deep breathing that can alleviate anxiety. Talking your anxieties over with your partner and or with other expectant moms can also generate relief.
For dads, your pregnancy mood swings. Dads-to-be share a lot more than an expected bundle of joy with their partners. In fact, long before that bundle arrives, you may share in many of the symptoms, including pregnancy mood slumps, which are surprisingly common in expectant dads. Fluctuations in your hormones can play a role. Yes, your hormones are talking too, but feelings factor in as well. Just about every dad-to-be, like most moms-to-be, experiences a host of conflicted but completely normal feelings in the months leading up to one of life's most major changes. From anxiety, to fear, to ambivalence, to a crumbling of confidence. No wonder your moods can take a hit. But you can help boost your pregnancy mood and perhaps prevent the postpartum blues, which about 10% of new dads find themselves experiencing. Talking. Let your feelings out so they don't bring you down. Share them with your partner, and let her share hers too. Make communication a daily ritual. Talk them over with a friend who recently became a father. No one will get it like he will. Or find an outlet through dad's social media. Moving. Nothing gets your mood up like getting your pulse up. A workout won't only help you work out your feelings, but those feel-good endorphins can give your mood a long-lasting boost. Getting baby busy. Gear up for the anticipated arrival by pitching in with all the baby gear gathering and other baby prep that's likely going on. You may find that getting in the baby spirit helps give your spirits a boost. Cutting out or cutting down. Drinking a lot can swing your moods even lower. Though alcohol has a reputation for being a mood booster, it's technically a depressant. So there's a reason why the morning after is never as happy as the night before. Plus, it's a coping mechanism that covers up the feelings you're trying to cope with. Ditto with drugs. Eating well. Like with the mama-to-be in your life, eating well and keeping your blood sugar on an even keel can help moderate mood swings. Focus on lean protein and complex carbs instead of getting pumped up with sugar and caffeine, which can crash your blood sugar, bringing your mood with it. Remember, there's a difference between pregnancy mood swings and actual depression during pregnancy. And that goes for both expectant moms and dads. True depression can be physically and emotionally debilitating. It can wear on relationships, impact eating, sleeping, normal functioning, your work and your social life, and keep you from enjoying what should be, and can be, an exciting, joyful life change. But research shows that a father's depression can ultimately affect his baby's well-being too. So don't wait. If you're having symptoms of depression, especially if you're also having feelings of rage or violent thoughts, seek professional help from your physician or therapist right away.
All about weight gain during pregnancy.
Maybe you've been looking forward to putting pounds on after years of dieting to take them off, or at least keep them from piling on. Maybe you've been dreading watching the numbers on the scale creep up for the same reason. Either way, for most moms-to-be, weight gain isn't only a reality during pregnancy, it's a necessity. Gaining the right amount of weight, in fact, is vital when you're growing a baby. But what is the right amount of weight? How much is too much? How much is too little? How fast should you gain it all? And will you be able to lose it all or most of it after delivery? Short answer to that last question, yes, if you gain the right amount of weight at the right rate on the right types of food. How much weight should you gain? If there were ever a legitimate reason to pile on the pounds, pregnancy is it. After all, when you grow a baby, you've got to do some growing too. But piling on too many pounds can spell problems for you, your baby, and your pregnancy. Ditto if you accumulate too few. What's the perfect pregnancy weight gain formula? Actually, since every pregnant woman and every pregnant body is different, that formula can vary a lot. Just how many pounds you should aim to add during your 40 weeks of baby growing will depend on how many pounds you were packing before you became pregnant. Your practitioner will recommend the weight gain target that's right for you and your pregnancy profile. And that's the guideline to follow, no matter what you find here. But in general, weight gain recommendations are based on your pre-pregnancy BMI, or body mass index. Your BMI, essentially your body fat level, is calculated by multiplying your weight in pounds by 703, then dividing by your height in inches squared. But it's much easier to skip the math and do the calculations on a BMI app. You can search adult BMI calculator at cdc.gov or use the chart in What to Expect Eating Well When You're Expecting. If your BMI is average between 18.5 and 25, you'll probably be advised to gain between 25 and 35 pounds, the standard recommendation for the average weight pregnant woman. If you start out your pregnancy overweight, BMI between 25 and 30, your goal will be somewhat scaled back to somewhere between 15 and 25 pounds. If you're obese with a BMI greater than 30, you may be told to hold your total to between 11 and 20 pounds, or perhaps even less than that. Are you super skinny with a BMI of less than 18.5? Chances are your target will be higher than average, upward of 28 to 40 pounds. Carrying multiples, for moms providing room and board for more than one, extra babies will require extra pounds. It's one thing to set an ideal weight gain goal. It's another thing to get there. That's because ideals aren't always completely compatible with reality. Piling on the right number of pounds isn't just about piling the right amount of food on your plate. There are other factors at work too. Your metabolism, your genes, your level of activity, your pregnancy symptoms, the heartburn and nausea that make eating too much like hard work, or those cravings for high-calorie foods that make gaining too much too easy, all play a role in helping you pack on, or in keeping you from packing on, the perfect pregnancy poundage. With that in mind, keep an eye on the scale to ensure that you're reaching your weight gain target.
Why more or less weight gain isn't more. What do you have to lose by gaining too much weight when you're expecting? Packing on too many pounds can present a variety of problems in your pregnancy. More padding can make assessing and measuring your baby more difficult. And added pounds can add to pregnancy discomforts, from backache to varicose veins to fatigue and heartburn. Gaining too much weight can also increase the risk of preterm labor, of developing gestational diabetes or pregnancy-induced hypertension, of ending up with an oversized baby who's difficult or even impossible to deliver vaginally, of complications after a cesarean delivery, of a host of problems for your newborn, and of having more trouble with breastfeeding. Not surprisingly, too, those extra pounds may be extra hard to shed postpartum. And in fact, many women who gain too much weight during pregnancy end up never shedding them at all. Gaining too little weight can also be a losing proposition during pregnancy. Babies whose moms gain less than 20 pounds are more likely to be premature, small for their gestational age, and suffer growth restriction in the uterus. The exception? Obese women who can safely gain 11 to 20 pounds or less.
At what rate should you gain? Slow and steady doesn't only win the race, it's a winner when it comes to pregnancy weight gain too. A gradual weight gain is best for your body and your baby's body. In fact, the rate at which weight is gained is as important as the total number of pounds you gain. That's because your baby needs a steady supply of nutrients and calories during his or her stay in your womb. Shipments that come in fits and spurts won't cut it once your little one starts doing some significant growing, as will happen during the second and third trimesters. A well-paced weight gain will also do your body good, allowing it to gradually adjust to the increased poundage and the physical strains that come with it. Gradual gain also allows for gradual skin stretching. Think fewer stretch marks. Need more convincing? Pounds put on at a slow and steady rate will come off more easily when the time comes, after you've delivered and you're eager to get back to your pre-pregnancy shape and into those pre-pregnancy genes. Does steady mean spreading out those 30 pounds or so evenly over 40 weeks? No. Even if that were a possible plan, it wouldn't be the best one. Here's how it breaks down trimester by trimester. During the first trimester, your baby is tiny, which means that eating for two doesn't require extra eating at all, and only a minimum of weight gain, if any. A good goal for trimester one is between 2 and 4 pounds, though many women don't end up gaining any at all, or even lose a few, thanks to nausea and vomiting, and some gain somewhat more, often because their queasiness is comforted only by starchy, high-calorie foods, and that's fine too. For those who start out slowly, it should be easy to play weight gain catch-up during the next 6 months, especially once food starts tasting and smelling good again. For those who begin gangbusters, watching the scale a little more closely in the second and third trimester will keep their total close to target. During the second trimester, your baby's getting bigger, which means your weight gain quota will grow too, picking up to an average rate of about 1 to 1.5 pounds per week during months 4 through 6, totaling 12 to 14 pounds. During the third and last trimester, baby's weight gain will pick up steam, but yours may start to taper off to about 1 pound a week, for a net gain of about 8 to 10 pounds. Some women find their weight holding steady or even dropping 1 pound or 2 during the 9th month, when ever tighter abdominal quarters can make finding room for food a struggle. A couple of pounds may also be shed once pre-labor kicks in. How closely will you be able to follow this rate of gain formula? Realistically, not that closely. There will be weeks when your appetite will rule and your self-control will waver, and it will be a rocky road, by the half gallon, to your weight gain total. And there will be weeks when eating will seem too much of an effort, especially when tummy troubles send whatever you eat right back up. Not to worry or stress over the scale. As long as your overall gain is on target and your rate averages out to that model formula, 1/2 pound 1 week, 2 pounds the next, 1 the following, and so on, you're right on track. So for best weight gain results, keep your eye on the scale, since what you don't know can throw your weight gain way off target. Weigh yourself at the same time of day, wearing the same amount of clothes on the same scale, once a week. More often, and you'll drive yourself crazy with day-to-day fluid fluctuations. If once a week is too much because you're scale phobic, twice a month should do the trick. Waiting until your monthly prenatal checkup to check out your weight is fine too. Though keep in mind that a lot can happen in a month, as in 10 pounds, or not happen, as in no pounds, making it harder for you to stay on track. If you find that your weight gain has crept up higher and faster than you'd planned, for instance, you gained 14 pounds in the first trimester instead of 3 or 4, or you packed on 20 pounds in the second trimester instead of 12, talk it over with your practitioner and discuss a strategy. It'll probably make sense to take action to see that the weight gain gets back on a sensible track, but not to stop it in its tracks. Dieting to lose weight is never appropriate when you're pregnant, and neither is using appetite-suppressing drinks or pills. These can actually be very dangerous. Instead, with your practitioner's help, readjust your goal to include the excess you've already gained and to accommodate the weight you still have to gain.
Weight gain red flags. If you experience sudden, rapid weight gain in the second and third trimester, especially if it's accompanied by severe swelling in the legs and feet or puffiness of the face and hands, check with your practitioner. Check too if you gain no weight for more than 2 weeks in a row during the 4th to 8th months, unless you're obese and your practitioner has you on a slowed down weight gain schedule. Chapter 7. The third month. Approximately 9 to 13 weeks.
As you enter the last month of your first trimester, that's something to celebrate. Many of those early pregnancy symptoms are probably still going strong, and that's nothing to celebrate. Which means it's probably hard to tell whether you're exhausted because of first trimester fatigue or because you woke up 3 times last night to go to the bathroom. It's likely a little bit of both. But chin up if you have the strength to lift it. There are better days ahead. If morning sickness has had you and your appetite down, there's a less queasy day soon to dawn. As energy levels pick up, you'll soon have more get up and go. And as urinary urges ease, you may have to get up and go less often. Even better, you may hear the amazing sound of your baby's heartbeat with a Doppler at this month's checkup, which might make all of those uncomfortable symptoms seem much more worthwhile.
Your baby, the third month.
Week 9. Your baby has grown to approximately 1 inch in length, about the size of a medium green olive. The head is continuing to develop and take on more baby-like proportions. This week, tiny muscles are starting to form. This will allow your fetus to move his or her arms and legs, though it'll be at least another month or two before you'll be able to feel those little punches and kicks. While it's way too early to feel anything, it's not too early to hear something, possibly. The awesome sound of your baby's heartbeat might be audible via a Doppler device at your practitioner's office. Take a listen. That thump-thump is sure to make your heart beat a little faster. Week 10. At nearly 1.5 inches long, about the size of a prune, your baby, who has officially graduated now from embryo to fetus, is growing by leaps and bounds. And in gearing up for those first leaps and bounds and baby steps, bones and cartilage are forming, and small indentations on the legs are developing into knees and ankles. Even more unbelievable for someone the size of a prune, the elbows on baby's arms are already working. Tiny buds of baby teeth are forming under the gums. Farther down, the stomach is producing digestive juices. The kidneys are producing larger amounts of urine. And if your baby's a boy, his testes are producing testosterone. Boys will be boys, even this early on. Week 11. Your baby is just over 1.5 inches long now and weighs about 1/4 of an ounce. Baby's body is straightening out and the torso is lengthening. Hair follicles are forming and fingernail and toenail beds are beginning to develop. Nails will actually start to grow within the next few weeks. Those nails are forming on individual fingers and toes, having separated recently from the webbed hands and feet of just a few weeks ago. And though you can't tell baby's sex by looking yet, even with an ultrasound, ovaries are developing if it's a girl. What you would be able to see, if your womb had a view, is that your fetus has distinct human characteristics by now, with hands and feet in the front of the body, ears nearly in their final shape, if not final location, open nasal passages on the tip of the nose, a tongue and palate in the mouth, and visible nipples. Week 12. Your baby has more than doubled in size during the past 3 weeks, weighing in now at 1/2 ounce and measuring about 2 to 2.25 inches. The size of a lime, your baby's body